You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Friday morning to you. Mike McNamara for a Friday edition of All Marine Radio here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Hope wherever you are, you're having a good Friday so far. Weekend's coming up. It is the summer, don't you know? So that's a good thing. Already on this Friday, Secretary of Labor, Mr. Acosta, has resigned. That in the news this morning. And I rode the bus yesterday. Colleen and I rode the bus. I'll tell you about that. We have a new commandant, General Berger. First full day at work. So you're going to hear General Neller's outgoing speech, General Berger's incoming speech. Together they last about 22 minutes, but this is All Marine Radio, man. You should hear what they have to say. That going on. And we'll check the news, update you on that a little bit, and then the chef will come by. We'll talk to him. Yesterday during the program, I talked about a study that was in the news done by the Center for Strategic and International Studies, CSIS, for those of you who track those kind of things. And principal author is a Marine named Mark Kansian, retired colonel. So I got in touch with him yesterday. He's going to come on. But, you know, what he talks about in the paper is military people standing up, in my opinion, and shouldering their moral obligation to give advice that doesn't take the country to war. And on this program, we've talked about every military thing we've done. We've been escorted there by the flag officers and general officers of the United States military. Every single one of them. When do you remember somebody resigning from the Joint Chiefs of Staff or resigning as the Chief of Staff of the Army, Commandant of the Marine Corps, one of the combatant commanders, because they did not agree with the direction that our policymakers were taking us in? And I think that's significant. The military just doesn't take orders. The military does take orders. But when you're given orders that you believe that are not in the nation's best interest, you have a moral obligation to the nation to stand up, to resign, and then stand up and say, hey, I want everybody to know that I think this is wrong as wrong can be. And anyway, so you're going to hear from him next week. So I'm excited about that. That is something that I think is a long time in coming in terms of we have to be better. We got to stop. You know, and as I was thinking about this yesterday, one of the things we talked about is, you know, failing in phase four, okay, which is Connecticut operations have concluded, right? So militarily, you've done what you're supposed to do. Now comes the time of, quote-unquote, nation building and essentially achieving what you sought to achieve when you went to war, okay? When you went to war, you know, what you sought wasn't simply the destruction of somebody's military. You sought to refashion through military operations a nation, and on the backside of that, to have a nation be something. What was that vision? A moderate representative government? What was your vision that promoted stability and American interest in the region that had us go to war in the first place? Otherwise, fence them off. We could do that. So we tend to be terrible at that. Well, as I was thinking about that, about phase four and why we suck at it so much, suppose from the outset your vision was flawed. That your vision of creating, the neoconservative vision of creating some kind of representative government in Iraq was flawed. That it wasn't going to happen. That it's not in there, it's culturally, it's not in that part of the country. And to do that, you would have to occupy that country for 2-3 generations. So what is that? 120, 150 years? 2 generations would be 60 years. It doesn't exist. So to do those kind of things, to refashion a culture, and so you look at the scope of the errors that were made from the onset in Iraq and Afghanistan, that somehow or other we as Americans would go in and we would refashion these countries. When every single one of them in the region knows one form of government, and that is the strong man rules with the aid of the military. And you're going in what? In 18 months? You think you're going to alter that? Let alone when you bring your cultural experts in and you hear them talk about the only reason Afghanistan exists as it exists is because of the heavy hand that the federal government has on the population. When that heavy hand is lifted, they will get after each other because they get after each other all over the region. So the Kurds will circle the wagons and they will fight everybody. Further to the south, the Sunnis will take on the Shiites because the Sunnis have dominated them in Iraq forever. The question is, will the Shiite get Iran's help and be able to shove back and emerge as a powerful majority in the nation? Because they haven't. They've always been dominated by... And so to me, you bring the cultural experts in and they say that to you. Or, I mean, go to Afghanistan and they say, well, this is really not a nation. It's really a confederation of city-states. And sometimes the federal government, you know, asserts itself. But for the most part, it's not that far removed from warlords running, you know, regions. Really? Yeah. And you're going to try to do what with it? Well, we're going to try to make it a modern nation. Okay. So to me, it's like, as I was thinking about issues in phase four, how can phase four be a good thing when the course you've embarked upon is fundamentally and fatally flawed? How can that be? And if your military guys and girls won't put their hands up and say, this is as wrong could be, or, hey, okay, if this is where we're going to go, just make sure that the American people know that we're going to be there for over 100 years and we'll probably be fighting, okay? Now, we're still fighting after 20 years in Afghanistan, approximately 20 years. If we're going to round that number, it would round to 20. we're still fighting there. It's amazing, right? It's absolutely amazing. And are we closer to subjugating a people to have them say, okay, we'll listen to this representative government? No, they push back just like they did with the Russian. So, anyway, it's interesting. So, if you don't have military people, if you have military people that want to get promoted and want to continue their careers and are not prepared to stand up, then you've got a problem. And I would tell you that that's a huge problem in the American military. That somehow or other we have got to get nonconformists promoted and people who are not afraid to lip off. And, you know, you hear this line, speak truth to power. They speak truth to power very deferentially and very politely. And I don't think, I think that day has, that ship has sailed. Because the only time the needle moves in Washington, D.C. is when somebody's rice bowl gets threatened. And how do they get threatened? They get threatened in the media. They get threatened by a public statement, not by a polite blah, 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 but by the truth may be seeing the light of day. And the latest case in point to that is, you know, the Democrats had no interest down on the border. I mean, you watched it for months, didn't say a word about immigration, didn't say a word about immigration reform. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to do anything about it. And then the picture of that man and his daughter drowning, and then congressional delegations going down there, All the dust that got thrown up. Well, you know, our Congress, it's their problem. That's where that problem is. It even got them to move. Even our Congress appropriated emergency aid to the tune of, what, $4.5 billion? Amazing. And so, again, I'm excited about doing the interview with Colonel Kenson. So you'll hear that probably Tuesday. And also pretty fired up to go down to MCRD next week for a lot of reasons. Peyton Davis will be there. I'll meet her for the first time. And I'm going to do a couple of hopefully different things during post-traumatic winning that I'm working on. And, you know, and now that I've done it for a while, you know, one of the things that I hope to record this weekend with General Furness is him saying words to the effect that, hey, first of all, good on your leaders for bringing you to this, because this is going to change lives today. And I, you know, it came to the 2nd Marine Division in January. We've had one suicide. So pay attention. I mean, just something very short. So I'm excited to incorporate things like that, you know. The words of people that have seen it, who've had their lives changed by it. And so, I'm excited about that because it gives it more credibility. And play that stuff at the start. So, anyway, so hopefully more people pay attention, more people take the words of wisdom of our culture that's dealt with trauma for a long time to heart, and then not only change their own lives, but then turn around and change the lives of other people. So I'm excited about that. And, let's see. So, with that said, Whitney Houston begins the program and begins the ending of the week. Good Friday morning to you and, to General Berger on the first day of, his commandancy, if that's what you call it. Good luck, sir. Don't screw it up.
Who's brought strife and bright stars?
And it's dedicated to General David Berger, Commandant of the United States Marine Corps. So, as I said before, good luck, sir.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Yeah, just another retiree, Bob Miller. All right, we'll check the weather. And then you're going to hear from Bob Miller. His last speech as a Commandant of the Marine Corps given yesterday at Marine Barracks 8th and I. And then right on his heels, you're going to hear General David Berger, his first speech officially as a Commandant of the Marine Corps. So they're both good speeches. So the weather currently in Quantico, it's warm, mostly cloudy and 86 degrees. Camp Lejeune, it is mostly cloudy and 83 degrees. 29 Palms, hot already. Mostly sunny and 90. Camp Pendleton, California is cloudy and 65. Camp Smith in Hawaii is dark cloudy and 78, so it's warmer. Okinawa, warmer. Dark cloudy and 83. In the Al Anbar province of Iraq, in the city of Ramadi, it is sunny and 107. Late in the afternoon, in early in the evening, a little bit further to the east, it is dark, clear, and 100 degrees in the city of Marja in the Helmand province of Afghanistan. In the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of Southern California, it is cloudy and 65. The wind chill sits at 65. Yeah, just in case you were wondering. Looking for a high of 80 today, 82 tomorrow, and 83 on Sunday. Yikes, summer might be showing up. Who knew? All right, that's a look at your weather. Now, yesterday at Marine Barracks 8th and I, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, outgoing type, Robert Neller, gave his last official speech. You'll hear that momentarily. And Commandant of the Marine Corps, incoming type, David Berger, he gave his first official speech. So, without further ado, in their own words, here they are.
Ladies and gentlemen, the 37th Commandant of the Marine Corps, General Robert B. Neller.
So y'all probably wondering what I'm going to do now, right?
No, he says that after he walks out, he grabs the microphone off the podium at 8th and I, and then they wheel the podium out, right? They wheel the podium out and the microphone's down. So he thought he was being pretty tricky at the time. So anyway, that's the nature of those comments.
A lot of emotions this morning, but first, Thanks to all of you for coming. I'm not going to try to name everybody because we'd be here all day. And so far the weather's holding up. And if you don't remember, we changed the sequence at parades to get the Marines out of here so they don't have to stand out here and listen to a bunch of old people talk and bake in the sun. So, but thanks to everybody for taking the time. Accepting the invitation. I know we got people here that traveled from Japan, Argentina, lots of distances, and they didn't have to do that, but we really appreciate that. I'd like to thank all the Marines at the barracks, Colonel Tomich and his folks. Place looks great. Weather's going to hold out. Please join us in the garden for the reception. I'd like to thank all the Marines across our Corps that the chaplain recognized. But for the people here, you know, everybody's here has helped Darcy and I somewhere along the way. We've crossed paths. I got some college friends here. I do have friends. There's two of them. That everybody here is somewhere along the line. You've either stopped me, pushed me, helped me, guided me, gave me a better idea. And for that, I'll be eternally grateful. I'd also like to thank the Burgers for being willing to take on this post. We tried to convey to them what this is, but there's a few of you in the audience who have sat in here or been a service chief, and I don't think you really understand it until you pass it. And but you got a really good team led by our chairman, General Dunford, who was a gift to the nation. I'd ask you to join me in a round of applause for our chairman. the General Milley, Chief of Staff of the Army, who's testifying right now, Senator Kane, you're supposed to be over there asking him really hard questions. Dave Goldfein, Joe Lengel, Carl Schultz, John Richardson, great team, great teammates. Thank you so much. And for all the COCOMs and everybody for listening to us. I could go on, but again, thanks. People have asked me recently, you know, some questions. First question, do you have any regrets? I'm like, oh, you don't have enough time. First and foremost, in April of 1977, I really regret burning down Range 2 at Camp Hansen. I didn't really mean to do that. I mean, we had a big pile of mortar increments, and they were going to torch them off, and I made the long chain, being a smart second lieutenant. It was a little windy, and the increment went in the air, and the grass was dry, and we burned down the whole range. And I thought I was watching something else burn as the flames worked their way all the way to the top of the ridge. And I got back to the battalion area, and they said, go see the XO, Major Cregan, who is now Monsignor Cregan. And I walked in his office, I stood at attention, reported, he goes, did you burn down that range? Sir, I did. Go see the battalion commander. Lieutenant Colonel Pfeifel, Bruce Pfeifel, walked in, stood at his desk, reported, did you burn down that range? Sir, I did. Don't do that again. That's it. Get out. And I left. And I was so happy. And I've had a couple of those where, for whatever reason, divine intervention or pity or just general disdain for my ability, I got to walk away and continue to serve and lead Marines. I regret that it's taken, it's so slow to make change. I regret that sometimes we may not meet the mark as a Marine Corps, but that's a small number of us. I regret if any time I fail, because any failing of our Corps resides with me and all this success goes to the Marines. The second question I get asked is, what do you want to be remembered for? What's your legacy? I said, I don't know. That's for the historians to decide if we did in the last 4 years anything worthy of note. But I think Sergeant Major Green and I have talked about, because he's getting ready to go over the side. You know, it's a tradition. You know, when you go to a training area or go to a range, you want to leave the range and the training area better than you found it. You want to make it a little bit cleaner, a little bit neater. The unit that used the range is trained a little bit more. And so if I want anybody to remember anything about the last 4 years, is that our Corps, we're a little bit better place. We're a little more ready. We're a little better trained. We got a little bit better equipment. But that's come through a lot of hard work from the Marines that are here in the stands and the senior leaders and the staff NCOs that have gone out there and did the work to leave the range in a better place. And the last question they asked me is, what are you most proud of? And that's tough. I guess in the aggregate, I'm proud of having served for, and when they read it last night, 45 years, I almost fell out of my chair. It doesn't seem like 45 years, but I'm proud that I'm proud of all the Marines I served with. I know what the Marine Corps looked like when I came in and got to Okinawa and 3rd Battalion, 4th Marines in June of 1976. And to be frank, and many of you, the senior Marines that are here, you remember, we weren't very good. We had good Marines. But as a group, our gear was old. We were at the beginning of the all-volunteer force. We had Marines in our ranks that today, they never make it in that recruiter's front hatch. But they were still Marines. And we trained them and we did the best we could with the money we had and the gear. But over time, through the efforts of great commandants like General Wilson and General Barrow. We raised our standards. We improved our recruiting. We improved our training. General Gray made us think about war fighting and maneuver warfare. We innovated with the Harrier and the Osprey. We did, and then we went to war for the last 18 years. And as much as we would like to stay in the world of counterinsurgency and stability ops, which is not going to go away, we've got to get ready for that next fight, which is going to be very, very different. It's going to be very different against somebody who's certainly in many ways as capable, if not more capable than us, if it comes to that. Hopefully it won't, but we can't count on that. We don't. Our course of action is not hope, it's be prepared. I'm proud to be part of an organization in the U.S. military that's held in high esteem, maybe is of any institution in our country, the highest esteem, because they believe that we do what we say and say what we do, and we hold ourselves accountable, that if somebody says something, it's going to happen, that we're men and women of virtue and character. We're not perfect. Sometimes we fall short. But for the most part, we do pretty well. And I think the reason one of the reasons most of us stay in our ranks is we like being around people like us. We like being around people who are men and women of virtue and character. And when you ask them to do something, they either say, I got it, or it's already done. And that makes serving every day a blessing. I'm also proud of my family. I think I did a great job raising three kids. I've been apprised, told that, no, you were really not much of a factor in that. Well, when I was there, did I do okay? Yeah, like when you were there. Because we were training, we're in the field, we're deployed, and we're no different. The Neller family is no different than the Berger family or any other military family in any other branch of the service. Our spouses carry the load when we're not there, and they probably carry the load when we are there. So we've got three great kids, Kurt, Brett, and Claire. They're married to three really great people. We've got three grandsons and a fourth one on the way. But that all goes to my battle buddy, Darcy. So like the Burgers, you know, I met this girl in sophomore English at East Lansing High School, and she really wasn't that interested in me. Went on a couple dates and found out she wasn't interested in me. Long story short is all the seniors graduated. I got a nicer car, and I had a shot. And somehow she decided to take on this restoration project. So I thank you for putting up with me, keeping me straight, telling me on those days when I woke up when I didn't want to be the commandant. Dave, there'll be days when you wake up you just don't want to be the commandant. But you are the commandant. You're our commandant. And so, as the poster says, put on your big boy pants, get out there and do your job, and everybody will follow. But Darcy, thank you so much. I'm not sure what it's going to be like with me around all the time. I'm going to certainly have to get a job because I'm not sure I'll survive first contact in the house. But we are going to Texas, and if we ever get this house built, we'll move in. That's another story. But again, I thank everybody for being here. You honor us with your presence. We would have never been able to do this without your help and your support. You did stuff that I probably never know about, and you did a lot of stuff that I saw that was selfless, and it was about the team. And this day, at the end of the day, is not about me. It's not about Dave Berger. It's about our Corps, and it's about those 186,000 active and 39,000 reserve, 20,000 civilians and about 100,000 family members out there that do the nation's business under the direction of the President, Commander-in-Chief, and Secretary of Defense. And so I'd ask you to keep them in your thoughts. Give them the the will to do their mission, to work hard and to train hard and be prepared for whatever comes their way. But I look forward to seeing folks afterwards. I think the weather's going to hold off long enough for that. But again, thanks. It's been a great ride, but it's time. It's time. I had my run, and I'm going home. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, General David H. Berger.
Mr. Secretary, Chairman Dunford, members of Congress and all the senior leaders that are here and state leaders, Marines and friends of Marines, as General Neller and the Secretary said, it really makes it a special day that you're here. It would not be the same turnover without you. So we're very grateful that you're here. I was thinking, sitting in the front row, which I've never sat in before, the view. But I've been to ceremonies here. The view when you look out from the bleachers is pretty impressive. It's like borderline inspiring. I don't quite know why. I think General Neller just captured it. This is precision. This is discipline. This is as close to perfection as you can get, which is the Marine Corps. Never satisfied, as General Neller said, but always striving for perfection. When you look back where I'm privileged to stand now, when you look back into the stands, it is, I would just tell you, equally inspiring. And I say that because the people, when you stand here and look back, these are leaders that you look up to. These are the quiet heroes of our Corps. And I would just tell you thank you on behalf of the Marine Corps. Thank you for your leadership. Thank you for your personal example. Thank you for your faithful service to Corps and country. There are just a couple thanks. There won't be many. First, Secretary Spencer could not join us here today, but there's no way I would be out here without him nominating me. And that means he has confidence. I need to thank him for that. I am grateful for his support. So it begins there. The second thank you will be from Donna and me to the Nellers. There isn't really a book on how to turn over command, how to transition command, that I know of. But if there's a standard, a gold standard, it's how they do it. That house down there where they live, they moved out probably 3 weeks ago, almost a month ago, early. I couldn't tell you the hours they spent around the kitchen table in that quarters with me and Donna while we asked question after question after question about what it means to be Commandant of the Marine Corps. They made it uncomfortable for the Nellers in order for it to be comfortable for the Burgers. That's an example. We will never be able to pay you back. Hopefully we'll visit you in Texas, and both of us wish you the very best. There's a lot of mentors that are here today and some that are not. I would just tell you as a group, from the very beginning until today, we are shaped a lot by the people who coach us. And as just as Commandant Neller said, for me the same. People or in these stands and not in these stands, when we've made mistakes, when we've made bad decisions, they gave us a second chance. They would tell us, don't ever do that again. You need to think about this and that. Don't do that again. All I would say to the mentors who are here for me, who have coached me, is please do not let go. I am still coachable. I still need mentoring. But I'm very grateful for everything that you've done for me and Donna so far. The friends that Secretary Esper and the Neller spoke of. Friends in the military and friends in the Marine Corps are not like friends anywhere else. They're completely different. When we deploy, when we're not there, there's a whole nother family. They're not really relatives, but they pretty much are, that step in. Marine friends never leave you. There are a lot of friends here today, and Don and I are very blessed to have so many of them. Lastly is certainly the family. Not last because they're last, but because they're most important. Donna's family and my family, very, very close. And each deployment, each time when I was not there, they filled that complete void. I don't know how. It's like you aren't even missed very much. You are, but the family just, and the friends of the Marine Corps just completely wrap themselves around your family in a way like I've never seen anywhere else. They take care of you. They make sure everything's safe. They check on Donna and the boys. It's really remarkable. We do have four remarkable sons who have started remarkable families of their own. Could not be more proud. And as General Neller said, Donna and I, since high school, have been best friends. We are super excited to be where we are today. And I love you, babe. There's no way I can say it any better. I'm really looking forward to the life in front of us. If I had just a word or two to say to Marines, I would tell them the same thing that another former commandant mentioned to me a few years ago. I consider it a privilege just to wear the uniform, just to stand in their ranks. Even if you were not the commandant, it wouldn't matter, commandant or corporal. Just the privilege of wearing this uniform and calling yourself a Marine, it's an honor. I know they are deployed around the world. I know they are taking care of us so that we can sit here in the bleachers. They are, as the Navy says, they're standing the watch, and they're away from their families. We need to remember that, as General Neller said. I know we need to modernize the Marine Corps. I know we need to train better. I know we need to recruit the very best people we can, and we need to keep them in our ranks. We need to do all of that because, as Chairman Dunford has told us before, we will never send our force, we will never send our Marines into a fair fight. So I know what we need to do. And I'll just finish by saying that I believe in my soul Marines are different. We are not like everybody else. And the Marine Corps is not like every other organization. I think we are not defined by our equipment or our vehicles or our planes or anything else. I think our identity in our soul, our identity is firmly rooted in our warrior ethos. This is the force that will always adapt and overcome, no matter what the circumstances are. We fight and win in any climb and place. That's what we do, and that's who we are. Semper Fidelis. Thank you.
There you have it, General Berger and General Neller, as they pass the battle colors of the Marine Corps. So. It's always interesting on momentous days for both of them. I think that, those jobs where it is day on, at the end of 45 years, you're pretty much wore out. And so I spent. And on the issues that involve the Marine Corps and Marines and whatnot. And so, and then you hear, General Berger, who obviously is fired up. Interesting day, two landmark events for two general officers, who've risen to the highest, post in the Marine Corps. In the presence of General, Dunford, who, has risen to the highest post, a military officer can have. In the nation. So pretty cool day yesterday at 8 to 9. All right. One of the other things that we've talked about this week that I want to talk about here in the first hour is the census. All right. And so there's a discussion about who gets counted in the census, and people quote the Constitution. So I went to the Constitution to find out what exactly does it say about a census. So I'll read it to you, and then you can, the conversation can evolve from there. Article 1, Section 2 of the United States Constitution. The House of Representatives shall be composed of members chosen every second year by the people of the several states, and the electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite for electors of the most numerous branch of the state legislature. No person shall be a representative who shall not have attained to the age of 25 years, and been 7 years a citizen of the United States, and who shall not, when elected, be an inhabitant of the state in which he was chosen. Yeah, there was no he, she chosen, okay, just for clarity. All right, and here's where the census is discussed. Representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states, which may be included within the union, according to their respective numbers, comma, which shall be determined, so we talk about numbers now, which shall be determined by adding to the whole number of free persons, including, so slaves would not be counted, okay, including those bound to service for a term of years, indentured servants, and excluding Indians not taxed, 3/5 of all other persons. Right? The actual enumeration shall be made within 3 years after the first meeting of Congress of the United States, and within every subsequent term, 10 years, in such manner as shall be directed by law. The number of representatives shall not exceed one for every 30,000, but each state shall have at least one representative. Blah, 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 blah. So the language, according to their respective numbers, which shall be determined by adding two the whole number of free persons, including those bound to service for a term of years, and excluding Indians not taxed, 3/5 of all other persons. So when you read the census, right, this is that whole 3/5 thing, right? But anyway, the whole number of persons. Okay, so now the census happens, and you're trying to count everybody in the country. And a categorization in the census is, right, are you a citizen? So in the census you have those that are citizens, those that are non-citizens. The argument involves that if you're a non-citizen, you won't answer the question. And so, anyway, that's the language of the Constitution. And I thought that since it comes up and we discuss this issue, you know, it's important, obviously, to start from the source document. So, again, beyond me, when you're apportioning political control, and that's what these numbers are about, that political control, right, it's about citizens, right? It's about citizens. That's how you apportion it. You don't apportion it by people that happen to be here on visas that are non-citizen. You don't apportion it on anybody else who's here as a student or whatever that's a non-citizen. It's apportioned on citizens. I don't rightly understand the issue. And again, as I said yesterday, and I won't beat it up, but let me tell you, if anybody who doesn't ascribe the same motive to both parties is, in my opinion, is a fool. That question, the reason it was dropped was for politics. Now, people can shroud it in any reason that they care to, but the truth is, right, it's either about money or about power. It is never about altruism, ever, in this country. It's not how it works. So now a Republican president would seek to put that back on. And so now we're going to play political games. So anyway, all right, the chef is going to join us in about 8 minutes. So let me take a quick break, and then we'll come back. We'll real quick check some news headlines, and then after that, we'll take another break, and the chef will go ahead and join us. So good morning on a Friday morning here on All Marine Radio, and take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll check the news. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you. And we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I wanna walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and soak in the
All right, we'll check some news headlines right now. In Stars and Stripes, Labor Secretary resigns. There's a video that you should take a look at, and it's a Coast Guardman jumping on top of a drug sub, while it's underway. So they're chasing the subs. It's unbelievable, man. Honestly, and he's yanking hatches open. The Coast Guard cutter is chasing the this drug sub, and it's crazy. It's crazy. And the article starts with the semi-submersible filled with... So these things, I think they run majority below the water line, right? With kind of a hatch sticking out. So you don't see very much. So it's called a submersible filled with thousands of pounds of cocaine. Was rolling through the Pacific, ultimately bound for the United States. They're narco submarines. June 18th, there was a positive hit on one of these submarines, hundreds of miles off the Colombian and Ecuadorian coasts in waters patrolled by the U.S. Coast Guard. And this particular cutter is named Monroe. The ship deployed a boarding team with two small boats with a helicopter watching overhead. Guardsmen trained in boarding ships wore helmet cameras recording the moment that they round down the vessel. They're yelling, "Stop your boat," in Spanish. Right? And then they jump on the son of a bitch. There's more than 17,000 pounds of cocaine with an estimated net worth of $232 million, said Lieutenant Commander Stephen Brickley, a spokesman for the U.S. Coast Guard. Quote, "They're like the white whale," Brickley told the Washington Post yesterday, describing narco subs. "They're pretty rare. For us to get one, it's a significant event." He went on and said, Coast Guard patrols encounter a narco sub once a year or so. Boarding them can be pretty hairy. Smugglers can be armed, and when caught, they typically open a valve to quickly fill the vessel with water, sending all the drugs and evidence to the ocean floor. Pretty amazing. Yeah, so check that video out. If you put in Coast Guard and Monroe, M-U-N-R-O, you'll see the video. It's crazy. It's crazy. A couple interesting little tidbits. About 80% of the drugs that enter the U.S. come from the Pacific Corridor. 11% of those drugs come from semi-submersibles. In 2009, the Washington Post reported that more than a third of the Colombian cocaine that ultimately arrived in the U.S. was smuggled in via submersibles bound for Central America and Mexico. So, that video is pretty unbelievable. So check that out. Let's see. If you want to see those, the video for those, actually, if you want to see the video for the Commandant speeches, pretty easy to find. There's a pretty cool picture. The, Acting Secretary of Defense, in the background, General Gray in the background. Who else? There's Mrs. Neller in the background. The Commandant getting ready to hand the colors after he'd taken them from Sergeant Major Green. You have the Chief of Naval Operations in the background. You have the, Chief of Staff of the Air Force. So, Bob Neller hands it over. So you can find that in USNI News if you've never checked out. Let me tell you something about USNI News. It is the most disciplined news page. They report. You don't find a whole lot when you look at their news. They report stuff. For instance, at the top of the fold today, report to Congress on hypersonic weapons. Yeah. Find stuff like that. And the other thing I'd tell you that if you're really bored, go ahead and check out is General Milley's testimony before Congress as his confirmation hearing yesterday. So So that top stories in Marine Corps Times today is obviously the change of commandants. And then beyond that, not a whole lot new. You know, and I've mentioned this, and again, it goes to the whole bleaching of history. And headline, this move would end naming bases, ships in honor of the Confederacy and its leaders. The Defense Department officials would be barred from naming any bases, ships, or other equipment after Confederate military leaders and war victories under language inserted into the House budget bill on Wednesday. The prohibition approved by House lawmakers without objection would not force any changes to existing names on bases or installation, but would mandate that the Defense Secretary not use the problematic Confederate monikers in the future. Now, let me tell you that. That's the first step. And again, I'm not for bleaching our history, but at the same time, is it appropriate if you're a black officer, a black enlisted man or woman, that you go to work every day aboard a base that somebody who fought on the side of the Confederacy? I don't believe it is. Now, I think my own opinion is you rename the base. You take that name and you build a museum and you talk about why the base existed so long under that name, who that individual was, why the state sought to honor them, the reason the federal government allowed that in the first place to bind the wounds of the nation, and then you tell the story of segregation, of slavery, and you use it as a teaching moment. I believe every one of those is an opportunity to educate on a broader forum. But I don't think that's right that if were I a black member of the United States military, that I have to go work aboard a base that is named for somebody who fought for slavery, no matter how anybody wants to code it. I know some people don't like that, but I don't really give a shit. So, anyway, top five stories in Early Bird real quick, and then we'll get the chef on here. So, again, I would tell you that's the first step to the second step, which would be controversial. Number one, senators want to know if the next Joint Chiefs Chairman can stand up to Trump. So that's the headline coming out of General Milley's confirmation. Two, Esper's Defense Secretary confirmation hearing planned for Tuesday. So that interesting. General Berger, number three, General Berger becomes the 38th Commandant. Here's what he'll be facing leading the Marine Corps. And again, it's the continued modernization, it's peer warfare and developing that. Number four, lawmakers question probe about Hayton of sexual assaults. Congress should be given the opportunity to hear directly from the woman who accused the nominee for vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of sexual misconduct, a key senator told reporters Thursday, as other Senate legislators suggested a delay in the nomination process is needed. Now, here's the interesting part about this. Now, I'm closing my eyes. Which senator, you know, would suggest such a thing? That in spite of the DOD saying we've investigated all of this and we can substantiate none of it, okay? Senator Tammy Duckworth from Illinois. I think members of the committee deserve to hear from the accuser, though it's up to her whether she wants to do it and whether she wants to do it in closed meeting, in open meeting. I will guarantee you this, if she does that in open meeting, he'll never get confirmed. Right? He'll never get confirmed. Even though the DOD has said we cannot substantiate anything she says. And so he will be tried in a court of public opinion, and he will lose. So, anyway, that's the way those politics go. Number five, Navy nominee brings a cyber experience to top echelons of Pentagon leadership. We were talking about that yesterday, rather, about Vice Admiral, which means he's a three-star, Michael Gilday. So he's a surface warfare guy. He did command the Navy's cyber arm. So he's been nominated to become the next chief of naval operations. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, the chef joins us here on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio. So on a busy morning, I have to tell you about riding the bus too with Colleen. Let me tell you that real quick. So Colleen and I, we go get on the bus, and yesterday, and I will tell you. I will tell you that, I've always loved doing stuff like this with my kids. And you mean, what do you mean, Matt, riding the bus? Yeah, that's what I mean, riding the bus. No, I just mean stuff like that, right? And so if she's going to ride the bus, she's got a job and needs to get there, then I think that the first time she does it, right? You know, you do it hopefully with somebody, you know, a parent who goes there with you anyway. So we do that. But let me just give you the unintended consequences. So, you know, we live in Orange County, California. Okay? The people you encounter on the bus are not the people that you encounter in everyday life as a middle class white person in Orange County, California. Right? They don't have cars. They can't afford cars. The majority of them are women going to different jobs. You see families on there. And you just see a different view of the community. So in addition to navigating the bus system, which we did, we got that off down in Newport where she works. We went and got something to drink and then we came home. I mean, you see all kinds of people getting off and on, people going to medical appointments who don't have cars. Getting off and on. You see people, as I said, you see women, mostly Hispanic women, going to jobs as cleaning women, you know, got their bag of rags and their cleaning stuff and they're getting around. You see families, a family with two cute little girls with bows in their hair and Mickey Mouse shirts on who went down for a day at the beach, right? They don't know that they don't have very much money. Right, they're just living their life and with their mom and dad and two cute little girls. And so you see that all in about, I don't know, a 3 or 4 hour, you know, bus ride. And so in addition to learning about the bus system, there's a lot of other learning that's very cool about your community. And I encourage parents all the time to volunteer with your kids, to get your kids outside their comfort zone and show them the community. And show them how lucky they are to have the opportunities they have. And again, you can lecture them, or you can show it to them. And I promise you, if you show it to them, right, they will pick up the lessons. But if all they do is live the life of an upper middle class white kid, or an upper middle class Hispanic kid, or whatever, an upper middle class black or Asian kid, then you get what you get, which is normally a selfish little shit. But I will tell you this. I tell the story about Patrick going into a developmental home on a Christmas and taking meals to about 8 different places and seeing various forms of people with walkers, with oxygen tanks hooked to the walker, amputees, you know, and just, you know, the way you live. You know, when life has been difficult and walking out to the car, he looks at me and says, you know, Dad, I don't need anything for Christmas. And so as much of a hammerhead as I thought my number two son was, turns out he's not. But unless you create that experience, unless you introduce he or she to that, then you get what you get, which tends to be a selfish little shit. So, just a cool day yesterday spent with Colleen. So, we'll take a quick break. We'll get the chef on here. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.